Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alrighty, hour number two here on the show. Tiki and Tierney, hopefully you are doing well as you can be doing. Getting through the day, getting through the kind of piecing it all together. Get through today, and we get through tomorrow, and then we get through the weekend, then we'll get through next week, and before you know it, we'll be out of the woods. We'll get there. Of course, we're doing it inside of our studio here. A little different these days. I'm at home. Tiki's at home. We have not been in our Manhattan studio for well over a week now and probably won't be there for the foreseeable future. But still, the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio is mobile. So home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button, get mortgage on this Thursday around the country. We got Bruce Arians coming up third hour. So that's next hour, 1 hour from now. Bruce will join us, which will be great. Bottom of this hour, Antoine Winfield, former Minnesota Golden Gopher safety. And he's going to be prominently featured on draft day, a safety. So he'll go relatively early, get his thoughts on the Gophers and the draft and all that stuff. And some stadium issues in California that can really complicate the fate, at least the immediate fate of three teams. We'll get to that in a couple of moments. So I told you yesterday, Teak, that I was going to share with you my opening day story. One of my opening day stories. I mean, I've got a bunch, but this is the one that takes the cake. You ready for it?
Go ahead.
All right. So keep in mind, 1996, the Yankees beat the Braves. And that's in game six at the stadium. I'm there. I just graduated college. I'm with my best friend who eventually would go on to be my best man at my wedding. And we are behind the dish, top tank, though. We're upper deck, but we're right behind home. So we're there in 96 when they win it. And for Christmas that year, I got two tickets to opening day for 1997 when they would raise the banner at Yankee Stadium, the home opener. They had played, they've started on the road, but the home opener, right? Mm-hmm. So they're playing the A's, and the funny part is that we get there early watching BP. I actually get a baseball. I always get balls from these. It's amazing. I got a baseball from Steve Carsey, who was a pitcher back in the day. Pitched for the Yankees at one point, but it was with the A's. He throws me a ball. We get up. Again, I'm just out of school. So we are living in my buddy Rob's. His dad owned some nice apartment buildings in downtown Brooklyn, Brooklyn Heights, Montague Street. You know the area.
Yep.
Okay. And that's the only reason we can afford it. We get up at like 9 o'clock in the morning. We're pounding Jägermeister. I mean, we are 22, three, and we are raring. I'll never forget, the plumber came in to fix something, and we're both behind our bar. We had a bar in the apartment. He goes, "You guys aren't actually drinking tonight." Like, it was like 8:52. Like, it's opening day. Fix the toilet and get out of here. Right. So by the time we get on the train,
he was just jealous, man.
Exactly. He was a Mets fan. By the time we get on the train, we're half cocked here, right? So there's a picture that I have not seen in 20 years that I found today that I posted on my own personal Instagram account at Brandon Tierney. It's whatever, 20, some underscore 26. It's verified. It'll pop up. Go see it if you want. So there's a picture of us on the train with, you know, knocking back 40s in brown bags going to the stadium. Now, the funny part here is, first of all, from a baseball point of view, Yanks are winning 1-0. They're playing the A's. Mariano's on the hill. He's already Mariano, basically. Mark McGwire hits a game-tying bomb in the bottom of the ninth to dead center, 440 feet in the black at the old Yankee Stadium, ties it up at one, and then Mariano, you know, hits the bench eventually. Yankees lose 3-1. But the crazy part about this day, keep in mind, my best friend, high school baseball, college baseball, best man. We're there when we win it. We're here on opening day. We're right, 10 minutes. This is the 10 minutes before the first pitch. Now, I had both tickets in my pocket for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. And we're on a beer line. Teague, this is insane. And I go, I don't even know. I mean, I got a hell of a buzz going, and so does he at this point. We're feeling pretty juiced up. And I guess either he went to the bathroom and I stayed in line to get beer, or vice versa, one of those two combinations. Long story short, we got disconnected from each other, right? I didn't see him again. I did not see him again until 9 o'clock that night.
Well, how did he even go to the game?
We were already in the stadium. Oh, I guess for whatever
reason. But he didn't know where his ticket. He didn't know
exactly.
Where his
exactly. So I'm sure that I gave him the ticket because they were a gift for me, and I gave him one. And then I think I don't know why I had both of them, but we were clearly in the stadium. So I know where to sit, and I'm like, there's no cell phones. It's 1997. I can't communicate with the guy. Teague, I got so, and at one point, I'm like, I just got to keep banging them back.
Wait, so you're out there drinking by yourself?
No. I'm like, I got to find some people. Keep in mind, I was 22 or 23.
Go ahead.
The last row at the old Yankee Stadium, right beneath the scoreboard, I just, for whatever reason, I walked, I don't know why I did this. I walked all the way back there. I wind up meeting like 20 people who were like in their early 30s, guys and girls, and they're feeding me shots and they've got flasks and I threw up. I was an absolute train wreck, right? So now I got to get home. I haven't seen him. After a while, I just forgot about him. And it was so sad because this is my best friend. Nobody loved the Yankees together like he and I did jointly. We went to a million games together. We idolized Mattingly. We don't see each other. We're not next to each other when Joe Torre and Don Mattingly raised the banner, right? So finally, I'm like, I got to get the hell home. I'm like kind of wandering around the Bronx at one point. I'm like, all right, it's time to get back to Brooklyn. I get on whatever the hell train I get on. We were on the fourth floor, maybe even the fifth, of a walk-up. Tiki, I crawled. I didn't walk up these stairs. I crawled up these stairs. And when I'll never forget opening the door to our apartment. I was on my knees hoping that the key would work, right? Mm-hmm. I opened the door. I fell. I passed out. I remember I just crashed on the floor. I wake up. It's got to be now like 11 or midnight. I look over, he's on the couch, passed out next to me. Dude, we didn't say a word to each other for 12 hours.
That's funny.
Oh, come on. So
what did he say the next day? Like, how did he get home?
No, we rallied and we went out that night.
Oh, get out of here.
In the neighborhood.
Insane.
We went out in Brooklyn.
Insane. But where did he spend the game? Where did you ultimately find out that he spent the game?
He wandered around. I can tell you this, he didn't have as much fun as I did. He did not meet a fun group of people like I did. I mean, these people were doing it. They were lighting up joints back there. It was insane. I mean, it was absolutely, this is the days of the old Bronx. I mean, it was crazy. So, God, I mean, I don't really miss that day necessarily, but I do miss opening day. So if you got your Baseball Jones, that's a little story for you. Go check out the Instagram picture from that day. I guess it would have been the one train going up to the Bronx. First of all, I have hair. I got a Penn State jersey on for some reason, and I'm holding a 40. Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. All right, Teague and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio. So, Teague, we got some stadium issues, man. We've got some stadium issues in Southern California, which and Nevada, which is jeopardizing and significantly threatening the readiness for these two stadiums and three teams for the start of the season if the season starts on time. I mean, this is incredible. One of the workers, and I'm sure that there's more, but one has been tested for the COVID virus and he tested positive. Now they're shutting it down. I mean, this could be a major, somewhere between a nuisance and a real dilemma for both the Rams, Chargers, and of course also the Raiders.
Yeah, no, the Raiders are the one that, you know, kind of make you feel worse about. One, because the NFL draft was supposed to be held there in just under a month, and it was going to be a showcase for Mark Davis's move from Oakland to Las Vegas, and we're going to see the stadium. I mean, I was looking forward to going out there to cover the draft simply so I could go see the stadium.
Yeah, like, no doubt.
We've seen the renderings of this thing, and it's just amazing. And now here we are, stuck in limbo, as a lot of the world is right now, and the stadium might not get done, And then what happens, right? If the Las Vegas Raiders stadium is not done by the start of the regular season in the NFL, what do? They can't go back to Oakland, I don't think. I mean, maybe they can because they have a relationship, even though it feels like it's been really contentious over the last couple of years. Even lawsuits were filed and things of that nature. Maybe they go play somewhere locally.
There's no way they could play at the Coliseum. I really don't think they can, the Raiders.
I agree. So, I mean, what do they go play locally? You know the area a little bit better than I, but is there a stadium?
No.
There's nothing there.
No, you can't play at Sam Boyd, which is where the Rebels play UNLV football, that's ill-equipped for the NFL. They might have to go to Arizona and share something with the Cardinals.
Can you imagine? I mean, just think about how disappointing this year is disappointing for a lot of people. I see all these memes like, can we just cancel 2020? You know, it's been horrible in so many different ways. Yeah. But can you imagine how bad this is for the Raiders and this launch of this new identity that we all thought was going to happen for them in the NFL with the Vegas being a prime location for visiting fans to come. You got to pick a trip. Yeah, you know, I'm going to go see my team playing a road game. Hey, they're playing the Raiders. Let's go to Vegas. Like that was going to happen over and over and over again. And now, we're playing the Raiders. Let's go to Arizona. Right? It just doesn't ring the same as we would have expected. Now, ultimately, man, a year from now, it gets done and everything resets, so to speak. But this was a high expectation for this Raiders Renaissance, in a sense, in Las Vegas, and now it looks like it's in jeopardy, serious jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I don't pretend to know up to the second, I don't have up to the second alerts of stadium construction, exactly what point they're at. I'm not even sure which stadium. I believe it's the Raiders is further along, I think, right? For sure.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, because they were set to be done by this summer. I mean, you know, before, but by the time the draft was coming to town. So I think they were a couple of months away, not like, you know, half a year away.
Who would be the worst? I think you can make a case that this would probably be more damaging to the Chargers. Don't you think? Let me tell you why, though. Because I don't think the Rams are going to be very good this year.
Yeah.
And I think the Chargers could be really good. And if the Chargers are relegated to that shoebox soccer stadium again, it quells what could be a nice undercurrent of maybe some conversions or organic transitionings to Charger fandom.
Well, Charger fandom, I feel, is I think it's going to be in limbo for a while, BD. Like we saw this when they're playing in that little soccer stadium, 30 something thousand seats.
It was less than that, less than 30, 20
maybe,
something.
But
I want to say 24.
They didn't fill it with their fans. It was other teams' fans that would come fill it. We know that their fans from San Diego have disconnected almost completely from them. You hear no buzz about them in Los Angeles because the Rams for the first last two years, have been the better team. You know, obviously going to a Super Bowl two seasons ago. So it's like they got swallowed in this move. And now they don't have a home either. I think the Chargers are in a very tough position. Now, the only good thing about this is if, I don't know if there's default language, but do you think there's a scenario where the Chargers do something else? You know what I mean? That is, don't go be co-tenants with the Rams.
Boy. I mean,
doubt that happens. Oof. But If there was a silver lining, maybe there is another shot to go build a stadium somewhere else.
Where?
Or go back to San Diego.
Well, that's the thing. That's the one that would seem most plausible on the surface. I mean, unless Oakland was so desperate for...
Yeah, but I don't think Oakland is desperate for a team. I mean, maybe they are, but they could have kept the Raiders. They didn't. Like, the community didn't want to dole out the money.
No, but I'm saying now that they've seen, or once they feel some of the repercussions on the economy with the Raiders being gone, maybe they have buyer's envy or lack of buyer's envy or buyer's remorse or failed to buy remorse. And I don't know, maybe they're motivated in a way and galvanized in a way that they weren't necessarily when the Raiders were there. I don't think that's the case. I'm just thinking out loud. I do think that the San Diego Chargers would be, or to return to San Diego would probably be, first of all, that's what should happen. Yeah. Maybe it's taken an epidemic to get the San Diego Chargers back where they belong.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think a lot of people would like to see that. I just don't know the realities of that. But there's some repercussions that are going to happen from this because these stadiums have been long anticipated. The naming rights have also been, heavily negotiated. And, there's a lot of money at stake. We talk about the salary cap and, this league revenues continuing to go up. A big part of that are these naming rights, which are like hundreds of millions of dollars, $300 million for 10 years of naming rights. Now all of a sudden you're going to be delayed by a year. That's a big hit. It's a huge hit to the NFL's league revenues.
Oh, man. All right. Certainly a story to follow, but the coronavirus concerns could delay the opening of the Rams, the Chargers, the Raiders stadium. So what's on so many levels is supposed to be a great season for the NFL. The official coronation of Patrick Mahomes as a champion, Tom Brady going to play for the Bucs. By the way, Bruce Arians will join us in about 40 minutes here on the show. It's going to be great. Brady's new coach with the Bucs, obviously. And the new stadium for the Rams and the Chargers, the new stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, so many things that are happening that are interesting. It just seems like a lot of this, I don't want to say fully sabotage, but the energy, the steam, the momentum, the positivity's been thwarted a bit. There's no other way to frame it. It just, yeah, a lot of, not much good news for the NFL these days. Put it that way. Could be good news for Dak. Could be good news for the Cowboys, depending upon which way this goes. Dak and the boys back to the table, trying to negotiate. Jeez, I mean, talk about a protracted negotiation. Do you want the guy or not? Jesus, just give his contract already. Come on. Dak Prescott, what will he get paid? We'll have that conversation next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. It's 1-855-212-4CBS, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. Bruce Arians coming up next hour. That'll be awesome. That's going to be very good. Bruce, the head coach of the Bucks, Antoine Winfield, former Minnesota Golden Gopher safety. Next segment here on the show. All right, T, I have a question for you about Dak. Because we've sat here and we've dissected the numbers angle of it for months. So rather than be overly repetitive with that, I want to ask you this, and I want to frame it a little differently. Do you believe that Dak Prescott is more undervalued or overvalued by the Cowboys?
I think he's undervalued by the Cowboys.
Undervalued.
I don't think that they're not willing to pay what a quarterback who has young quarterback too, by the way, he's only in his fourth year, going into his fifth year, led you to the postseason, been your consistent starter. There's no question marks. There's no doubts that he's going to continue to get better. He's a great leader in your locker room. He's a great public forward facing face. But they're undervaluing his consistency because they don't think he's worth Patrick Mahomes type money or Russell Wilson type money. They don't believe that he's going to go higher, and so they're undervaluing where he potentially can go. You know what I mean? So they're valuing him at where he is as opposed to where he potentially can go. So that he's being undervalued by the Cowboys.
Thus far, that seems to be true. But how about these tweets now? Ed Werder obviously piped in. ESPN, he's back with ESPN, and obviously a real pipeline of information over the years from the Cowboys to the football community. Here's what Ed tweeted out about an hour or so ago, whatever it is. A source on Dallas's negotiations with quarterback Dak Prescott wouldn't describe a contract resolution as close, but said discussions are not contentious and Prescott, ready, will emerge as the highest paid NFL player. Okay. That's from Ed Werder. I got a little something from Rap Sheet as well, Mr. Rappaport. And he tweeted out, Prescott, no doubt, is going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, end quote.
I mean, it's just a natural progression of quarterbacks and quarterback pay. You know, Dak has been remarkably consistent, right? He's going to give you mid-20s in touchdown passes. He'd be right around 10 or so interceptions. His completion percentage is going to damn near nail 65 every year, right? He's remarkably consistent, whether he has Zeke or not. And, you know, the question has always, you know, focused on, you know, will he get better? Like, will he continue to climb? Will he hit that space where he's responsible for winning you a championship? And the way that he's been trending, I would say, yeah, because a lot of young quarterbacks, they have that struggle year, right, where it's just hard. Look at Baker. Baker jumped out off the gate after sitting behind Tyrod Taylor for the first few games, and it's like, dude, Baker Mayfield, he's got this thing figured out. Mm-hmm. And then we saw the struggle year. Or you see young quarterbacks, you go back even to Peyton Manning. He struggled as a rookie through 28 interceptions, but then he became one of the greatest passers in the history of football. Dak never hit a struggle year. You know, he was kind of consistent, and maybe the view is he's only going to be that consistent, but I would say I think he's made his floor very well defined. We know how good the least good he's going to be. We don't yet know how great he can be.
What's a good player comp for him? I was going to say Cam, but no, Cam was a better athlete and Dak is more efficient, so that's not a perfect one. Who's the best player comp?
There isn't one. That's part of the problem. Because he's not athletic like Russell Wilson, who scrambles around and, you know, can be running towards the sideline and throw a deep ball 55 yards downfield up with pinpoint accuracy. Right? There's not.
I mean, what about a young Big Ben?
He's not the same physical kind of player that Big Ben was. I mean, Big Ben, you know, extend plays to 7 or 8 seconds, which is ludicrous, right? And that allowed his receivers to make ridiculous adjustments downfield and backyard football it and get open, right? So that's not it. It's really hard to find a comp for Dak, and I think that's a problem. And maybe that is the problem, is that people are trying too hard to find the comp for him and base his value off of that. When in reality, you know, Dak's just going to get paid more because he's next. And I've said this year over year over year. I hate that about the quarterback position. It allows their salaries to, you know, almost exponentially grow relative to the rest of the league. But that's just how quarterbacks are valued, especially because they're the face of the franchise. They touch the ball every single play. They are the catalyst and can often be, you know, the downfall to success. And so, you know, he's going to get paid. It's just a matter of how they're going to structure it, because they might be up against the cap at some point.
Boy, it's a tough business when, you know, for your career. Granted, it's a relatively small sample, but 4 years in, you've got 16 more wins than you have losses. You have 60 more touchdowns than you have picks. You're right at 66% completion percentage. You know, you're durable. Everybody knows you're a high character guy, and it plays out so publicly for 5, 6, 7 months.
Yeah, I
mean,
agree.
Come on.
I know. So you got everybody making opinions about him. When all he's done is been good and won. It's a tough situation for Dak to be in. It is. Now, I say that, you know, it's a tough situation. He's scheduled to make $28 million next year with that exclusive franchise tag. So it's fine. The question will be, you know, how much more will the Cowboys be willing to go? And what level are you going to put him in? Because wherever they put him, Pat Mahomes is going to fly by it. So that exponential growth in salary is going to be determined a lot by Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, look at some of these exorbitant deals that were handed out, you know, last week or two in free agency. Not all of them are going to be a steal. Not all of them, that's for sure. Not all of them will see the end of the contract and then before getting cut or restructured. And you think about, you know, a quarterback who has all the positive winning reliable attributes that Dak has. I know it's more money, so it's going to be a bit more of an arduous negotiation. I get that, but I mean, geez, I mean, come on. I mean, last year, Le'Veon Bell got a ton of money from the Jets. He looked like he was 45 years old.
Yeah.
Running in mud.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of that's because he didn't do anything. I mean, he wasn't around. He didn't participate. I'm assuming he was working out, but he also sat out the entire year before. And so, like, we kind of forget that. There's some, I don't know, like, not attrition, because that's the wrong word, but there's some, like, lag that comes on your body when you don't play the game that you've been playing for a year,
mm-hmm.
right? Imagine a baseball player not taking any cuts for a whole season and then trying to get back in the box and do it.
Right? No, I get it. I get you.
You know what I mean?
So sure.
It's just, if there is going to be a bounce back year for Le'Veon Bell, it's going to be this year.
It's going to be this year.
And if it doesn't, then he's done.
I agree. I believe it. Yeah, I agree on both of those cases. You know, even somebody like Nate Solder, who got a little bit better as it went on, but early on looked like a big bust with the Giants.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yep.
4 years, $62 million. Tremaine Johnson coming from the Rams to the Jets. 5 years, $72.5 million. They couldn't wait to cut him, which they did the other day. That's all I'm saying. I mean, when you look at the waste of the sunken money by so many teams over the years with players that might not even see half of the term of the contract, I just don't get it. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I do, but I don't. I get it, but I don't. It's really unfair. Who else here? Let's anybody else jump out. Paul Richardson signed 5 years, $40 million with Seattle. You know, I don't know what his guaranteed funds are, but Malcolm Butler, 5 years, $61 million with the Titans. Justin Pugh, 5 years, $45 million with the Cardinals, formerly of the Giants. Yikes. I mean, those are some rough deals in most cases there. Anthony Hitchens got $45 million from the Chiefs, 5 years from Dallas. This was a couple of years. This wasn't last year. This was 2 years ago. So just imagine those numbers going higher. And, you know, it's the fluid nature of free agency. It seems so appealing. We have a hole. Here's a check. Let's fix it. But in reality, you're better off keeping your own, especially when you know that your own can play. You know what I mean?
That's right. It's absolutely right.
All right, T. Coming up next. So we've got the draft set for a little more than a month away, and the son of a former NFL star is hoping to hear his name called on day one. This kid could play. Helped elevate the Golden Gophers. Antoine Winfield Jr. joins us next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, we know you want some college hoops, so we'll give you a little something. We'll feed the veins. We'll pump a little something in there for you. This time of the year, we all want our hoops, so make sure you tune in to CBS and CBS Sports Network all week long for the NCAA Tournament Rewind and relive some of the best moments from March Madness. All sorts of incredible moments and snapshots and different players and coaches and moments frozen in time. CBS is doing a really great job with that, just bringing us a little something to help us connect the dots. This will help us connect the dots to the NFL draft. Watch this young man a lot this year. The Minnesota Golden Gophers, they raced out to a 9-0 start, including that incredible win at home against Penn State when Penn State was the top five team in the country. And the entire Gopher fan base was galvanized. This young man's getting ready for the draft, and his name is Antoine Winfield Jr., formerly of the Gophers. Antoine, Tiki and Tierney, how you doing today?
Hey, how's it going?
Going awesome. It was really, I thought you guys were a great story, even though you wound up losing. I believe that was to Iowa after the Penn State game, and you lost to Wisconsin.
Yep.
It was Iowa, right? And then you lost again to Wisconsin. So you got a little tripped up at the end there, dropping two out of three before you bounced back and you beat Auburn in the bowl game. But I got to tell you, man, watching Minnesota and the energy that PJ has injected into the program and the fans, it was really awesome to see. What was it like being a Gopher this season?
Oh, man, it was amazing. You know, this year we did things that Minnesota football hasn't done in over 100 years. So it was just great to be a part of the group that we had this year. And we just had a great time out there just having fun and playing football.
Yeah, and now you are about to try to fulfill every, I think, young football player's dream and get into the National Football League. And I wonder, you know, we all are dealing with uncertain times right now. How have you dealt with this as you prepare and, you know, try to get yourself physically ready, I guess mentally ready as well, for the NFL draft with everything that's going on? Everybody safe around you and your family?
Yeah, everybody's safe this way. You know, it's different because, you know, this virus is out there, so Like they canceled our pro day. We're not allowed to have face-to-face meetings with coaches and scouts. So that's just been tough. But we've been able to do that through like FaceTime and like phone calls and stuff. But I guess it's a different process now having this virus out there.
Yeah, no, it's different for everybody. And I wonder if it's kind of a disservice like to this class because you're not getting a chance to showcase yourself in front of some exec, whether it's you as a person or your physicality. Like, it's one thing to be sitting at the draft and or at the combine and see all these things going on, but it's a different thing when it's a pro day and you are having an in-person interaction with a scout or a coach or a general manager. You guys are getting shorted a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's unfortunate that it happened like right now, but you know, it's nothing really you can do but just follow the new process. So just go and have those FaceTime interviews and phone calls, and that's the best way we can do it right now. So just going along with that process.
You know what I want to know? And I want to take it back to, you know, before you went to Minnesota. And obviously your pops played a Pro Bowl. You know, your pops was a really good player. So colleges, you know, certainly knew the name and recognized the pedigree. Here you are getting ready for the draft. You're coming off a big-time season, 7 interceptions and incredibly well-documented. You're going to get drafted very high. Now, how do you wind up at Minnesota? I mean, what other schools wanted you? Was it were you overlooked? How did that happen?
Yeah, coming out of high school, I wasn't really heavily recruited. So for me, it was going to be between University of Houston or Minnesota. And growing up, I honestly had no clue I would be back up in Minnesota. So I lived in Minnesota for 9 years, and we moved down to Texas. And I just went up one summer to visit some friends. And one of my friends had committed to Minnesota at the time, and he was like, "Yo, Anton, you should come take a visit and check it out." I'm like, "Minnesota, and I'm good." And then somehow he convinced me to go take a visit. Ended up falling in love with the place and ended up making the best decision in my life.
Now, can that, you know, it's funny because schools like, you know, for the most part, Penn State, obviously Ohio State, Michigan, even though they haven't gotten to the championship or the semifinals, and I know Harbaugh is feeling some heat from some fans out there, you know, they still have a great pedigree. Minnesota, can this be sustained? Can Minnesota now become a player where they're perennially top 25, you know, vying for divisional crowns in the Big Ten and making a run at big bowl games? Can this become the norm now for Minnesota?
Yes, sir. I believe so, 100%. The players coming and playing underneath PJ Fleck, they're about to change the way that people think about Minnesota football. We already kind of put our foot in the door this year, but there's only great things to come from the future from the Minnesota program under Coach Fleck.
Yeah, he seems like we talked to him when he first got the job, and his energy was unreal. I was just like, he can't be for real. He can't be for real.
I've never met another person like him.
Yeah, wow. I believe we've never talked to another guy like him. Antoine, what year were you born in? I want to figure out where your dad was when you were born.
Yeah, I was born in 98. So yeah, my dad was going into his senior year at Ohio State. Right on campus.
Gotcha. So the years in Buffalo, you don't remember. So by the time he was at Minnesota, you were old enough to understand what Pops did for a living and was probably a fan of him. Do you remember those days and being, you know, 10, you know, probably younger, 8, 9, 10 years old, watching your dad play in Minnesota?
Yeah, when I was a kid, like, I didn't really think about it too much. I'm like, okay, yeah, my dad plays football, but then I would go to school, and then other kids would be talking like, "Yo, your dad plays in the NFL." I'm like, "Yeah, he plays football." Because I'm just so used to it. I'm used to seeing him every day, but everybody else around me was just like, "Wow, that's crazy." So I didn't really think about it like that as a kid growing up. Being older and realizing it, I'm like, man, that was great to, you know, be able to experience that. Like, my dad actually played in the NFL. And just having him, it was just great.
Yeah, what advice has he given you over the years? You know, I'm going through this a little bit. I have a 17-year-old who's getting ready to be a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. He's a wide receiver and playing pretty well. But, like, what advice did your dad give you? I'm sure you shared his passion for the game. I mean, obviously you did. You wouldn't be getting ready to get drafted if you didn't. But, like, what advice did you learn from him?
Yeah, something that he always taught me was just to be myself. You know, we share the same name, but there was never any pressure for me to play football. So that's the biggest advice, was just to be myself. Be unique and be your own separate individual and don't try to be like anyone else. I would say that was the biggest advice that he's given me.
Were you competitive with him? You know what I mean?
Yeah. We compete on everything.
That's awesome.
Everything. I love it.
Name it. We competing on it.
They didn't let you win either, because Derek Jeter always said that, you know, when Derek was a kid, you know, Derek's dad is a doctor, but so not a former athlete, but still wouldn't let Derek win at checkers, you know, chess, whatever they were playing, Connect Four, Frogger, Hungry Hippo, Twister, you name it, whatever you do as a kid, Chutes and Ladders, Candyland. He's like, no, I got to beat young Derek to let him know that life is hard and you got to earn it. And your dad probably did the same thing too, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah, growing up, he used to beat me in everything. Now the tables are turned. Now I'm old enough, I beat him in everything now, so it's great.
Yeah, except Antoine Jr., for the 40. Your dad ran a 4.41, you ran a 4.46.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, he got on me a lot about that because I kept telling him I was going to beat his time. And he got on me after I ran it.
Now, Antoine, all you have to do is say, Dad, you're so old. The watches were so ineffective back then.
Exactly.
There's no way you ran a 4.41. That was just a cheap watch.
Right. They over there hand timing. You get them on the laser.
Exactly. So, you know, when do you think you'll get drafted? Like, what's your expectation?
Yeah, my goal is first or second round.
Yep.
Yep. That's my goal.
Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt. Respect that.
Yeah, when you get into the league, and you do so much. I mean, you reminded me a little bit of my brother's, how he played the position, because you had sacks. You had 3 sacks last year. Obviously, a ball hawk, 7 interceptions. You're all over the field. How do you see yourself fitting in when you get somewhere?
Yeah, I see myself fitting in as a free safety in somebody's program or nickel. I could play either or. But, I'm versatile. I can play pretty much any position on the field. But I see myself in the nickel role or the free safety role.
All right, man. I mean, it seems like you're almost too – your head is almost on too straight. He's almost like frighteningly calm and incredibly well-grounded.
Yeah. Is there anything you're nervous about going into the next level? Because, I mean, the game is very different, obviously. But is there anything you're nervous about? I'm sure you've been told this many, many times.
Yeah, no, there's really nothing that I'm really nervous about. I'm just excited to get to a team and start working. You know, I've always dreamed about playing in the NFL ever since I was a young kid. And for it to finally be here, I'm just excited to see what I do at the next level.
That's awesome. Well, listen, man, it's a really – I remember the game against Penn State that I referenced before. I was in my car. It was – I believe it was the first weekend in November, because I was in my car going to call a college basketball game. And I remember I didn't want to get out of the car because I was so locked into the game with you and Penn State. We talked about your program a lot on our show. We really did. And when you guys lost to Iowa, granted, that's a tough place to play. Iowa's a good program. Maybe you guys had a little bit of a letdown after the huge win against Penn State. It was a story. I don't know if you guys felt it. Well, I'm sure you did. But, like, globally, at least nationally, Minnesota had an imprint on the football season that was felt everywhere. So it was really fun to watch it. And hopefully you guys enjoy the ride, because you had a lot of people rooting for you.
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable this season.
All right, man. Listen, don't spend all that draft money in one spot. Ask Pops how to allocate it. You know, you start, you put it away.
Pops played 14 years. Pops played a while. Pops played 14 years.
Right.
He did well.
Exactly. So invest wisely. Just ask your Pops what to do. Antoine, have a great – it's going to be a unique process. You won't be, I don't think in the city on draft day for sure. But however it goes down, wherever you get drafted, I think we all think you're going to make a terrific addition, a great career, and a really good young man. So good to see this happen to you, man. Keep going.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Good luck, Antoine.
Antoine Winfield Jr. Yeah. Now, what if AJ runs a better 40 than you? First of all, would he run a better 40 than you? No. No way.
Combine 40? He probably will, actually.
There's no way.
I ran a 4.56.
No. But your Olympic, your borderline Olympics, what was your best? 4.41, right? Best speed?
No.
4.2 what?
4.27.
Okay, there's no way he's running a 4.27,
no,
is he?
No, I don't think. I mean, well, see, he's not trained. So my advantage with speed is that I was trained to run fast because I ran track, right? So I knew how to do it. And so when I ran a 4.27, I was coming off a track season. So I was perfectly primed to run a 4.27.
Yeah.
AJ has never run track. And I ran track from ninth grade, you know, through my senior year. AJ's first track season was supposed to be this year, but obviously school is out of session. So he's not even getting a chance to run track right now. So he won't learn, learn how to be a runner until probably the summer when he comes here, and I take him and teach him some of the basics of running. And so like speed is all about technique, and he has natural speed, but in order to be like fast, you got to learn the right techniques.
How do you
start,
though?
So you're right. He'll probably never best my best.
Uh-huh.
But if he somehow has a great college career wherever he ends up going and gets invited to the combine, there's a good chance he'll beat my combine number because I didn't run a good combine number.
What's the first mechanical thing they even teach? Is it leg kick? Is it getting out of the blocks? Like,
well, you know, I mean, I showed you this in the break with when you showed me like 3 weeks ago, Colton hit that home run and he's got a natural trot.
Yes,
right. And the one thing you have to learn is when you're trying to be fast, you can't lean over, right? Because it impinges your hip from fully extending, right? And so you got to be upright. It seems counterintuitive because you think momentum leaning would carry you forward, but it actually slows you down because it impinges your hip.
I did it wrong all those years. Nice to tell me.
Well,
that's why you were never fast, right? No, so
you got to be upright. You got to step basically like you're stepping over your ankle. So you step up, lift your foot, step over your ankle, extend, and then strike right underneath your body, right? That's the proper technique. But it takes practice, just like anything. In order to be fast, you got to practice being fast. And I had practiced being fast. That's why I ran a good 40 at school. But then at the combine, I ran horribly because of that stupid Cybex machine, which sapped me and killed my legs.
Well, you still have a grudge with that thing, huh?
I hated that thing. And then you know what's funny, BT? Once I got drafted, they made me like train on it in the training room with the New York Giants because I had a muscle imbalance. My quads were too strong relative to my hamstring.
The hammies.
So after hating that thing and it made me run a bad 40, I had to train on it for like months in order to get my hamstring stronger.
This is your punishment.
Exactly.
March 26, 1979, Magic and Bird played. We know what happened. Has any duo ever done more for any sport more so than them? We'll get that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.